It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, both in the studio today.
Good morning,
Good
Ben.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Yeah. We are good.
Doing great.
Good to have you both together again. I was like, the band's back together.
Here. Exactly.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, last week, Wes was in a jury trial, but I was here, and we talked, and I talked about the elective share in North Carolina for a surviving spouse. We'd like to continue to talk about that today. Mm-hmm. It is also, or can be at times, a quasi-litigation type case in that if there is some are questions as to the value of the assets,
right,
questions as to exactly what passed outside of the estate, questions even, you know, of any nature, then these, of course, would be put forward in a hearing or a litigation-type arena before the clerk.
Okay.
The clerk would have the initial jurisdiction in determining the elective share. Now, for those that were not with us last week, let's review a bit, and then we'll get into some planning techniques in and around this. The elective share, for you listeners that were not with us last week, is a statute in North Carolina that allows the surviving spouse to lay claim, if you will, to a certain percentage of the estate of their deceased spouse, even if the will leaves the assets elsewhere. So this used to be called the right to descent. It's now called the elective share, but I think the right to descent to a will is good terminology because it's a little bit more explanatory.
Sure, it does so, say the right words there.
A spouse can come forward after their spouse has died. The will, let's say, leaves everything to the children from a prior marriage. They are not comfortable with that, and they have the right to descent or to file an elective share. Now, the percentages, again, are if it's less than 5 years of marriage, it would be 15%. If they've been married from 5 years to 10 years, then it jumps to 25%. If they've been married 10 years and less than 15, we're at 33. And over 15, it's the whopping 50%.
Right.
And 15 years flies by. Now, the context of this usually is in a second marriage or a third marriage with children from prior marriages. The parties, you know, have this understanding with one another. Wes and I hear it all the time. They come in the office and they say, when they're making out their last wills and testament, well, you know, we've always agreed that our assets are going to go to our children from our prior marriage. We're in a great relationship here, if you will, the geriatric marriage, sometimes called, the elder lovebirds, all of those great things. And the bottom line is that we want our assets to go back to our children. Well, now Wes and I've got a duty to advise in and around this statute. Because if the will just simply leaves assets to the children, it's possible that the surviving spouse and or their children under a under an agency agreement such as a power of attorney would in fact file for this elective share.
Right. As you said, if they are if there is a power of attorney involved, they may be, have a fiduciary responsibility to do that, right? The guardianship or whatever.
Yeah, no question about that. You know, if you don't file that claim for the elective share and you're the attorney in fact, then certainly you could have some people pointing the finger at you. And that's an issue. Now I'm sitting here, you know, listening to this conversation. I wasn't here last week.
Right.
And I didn't listen to it between what happened last week. I was in court last week and as an outsider kind of listening, well, put it this way, an educated outsider listening, this stuff is kind of complicated. So if I'm turning on the radio and I'm hearing all these words, man, my head is spinning.
Yeah.
So
and surprising, we had to, we discussed this after the show last week. You know, Kinsey, I know you had said it was surprising to you. You didn't know this.
I had no idea. I'm telling my mom, tune in, tune in.
Yes, that's right.
So, I mean, what do folks on the radio listen to this or listen to this on our website later on? What are we talking about? You know, what do they need to take away from this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what they need to take away is that, you know, what these two lawyers are talking about is you need to pay attention to this situation.
Right.
And the situation arises when potentially you have, you know, a situation where a spouse dies and doesn't leave the estate or all of the estate or a portion of the estate, you know, to the surviving spouse. Now, as Cecil said, this is normally happening in a second marriage, third marriage. You know, sometimes we see these situations where, you know, the one spouse passes away and really all that spouse wanted was to leave a life estate in the house for the surviving spouse. And, we see that type situation. We see other type situations where the assets are left directly to the children. So folks out there in radio world listening to this should just pay attention in the event that there's a death and in the event that there's a marriage and in the event that you're the surviving spouse or the children of the surviving spouse, then during that 6 month period of time after the person passes away, and it really runs 6 months from the date of, qualification. I think that's the way the statute,
when the
estate opens, then highly recommend that you sit down and talk with an attorney, talk with us, talk with another lawyer who deals with estate issues so you can look at what your rights are because, this elective share statute is very powerful. It does allow you to, elect, to take an amount of whatever the percent is based on how long you've been married to the person who died. And it's not just things like, you know, the house or the savings.
Right.
It's also life insurance. It's also gifts within the past year. It's also other non-probate assets like IRAs, annuities, these kind of things. So pay attention to that.
It was already complicated enough, but it really is. There's a lot of detail
that
needs to be considered.
Well, you know, normally, you know, us lawyers who deal with estates, you know, we have the two different categories.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the probate assets and the non-probate assets. And that's just ABCs, 1, 2, 3s, you know, to us. The probate assets are the things that would be, for example, controlled by the will.
Right.
You know, that might be a home that's in an individual name. Now, it wouldn't be a home that's tenants by entirety, that's owned with a spouse because by operation of law, it goes to the surviving spouse if it's titled that way. Other probate assets would be an account that's just in the deceased name, a vehicle, a boat, you know, things,
often are in just
tangible things.
Yeah.
Right. It could be if you have a closely held business, it could be the stock that you have in that business. So all these things that the will controls are probate assets. And then we have the other category, which is the non-probate assets. And really all that means is that these are assets that the will doesn't control, such as life insurance, such as an account with a beneficiary designation, like an IRA, 401k, such as a joint account with someone. If it's joint with right of survivorship, that upon the death of the first, it goes to the other, goes to the second, or the second and the third, if there's three people in the account. So we put all these, you know, category one, probate, category two, non-probate, but then we were talking about this elective share statute and the rights of this surviving spouse. The law does not limit the rights of the surviving spouse to only the probate assets.
Right. It's everything.
That's really a game changer because when you're talking about life insurance, annuities, IRAs, you know, we're talking about assets that even a piece of real property potentially that's joint with someone else could be joint with a child. It all goes into that definition of total net assets. So that number can get to be pretty big, you know, when we add everything up.
Commercial assets that somebody owns.
Anything. And absolutely. Of course, you can see why it would have to be this way, Ben, because otherwise a person would simply, place their assets joint with right of survivorship or title them in such a way, or the IRA beneficiary would be the children or the life insurance, and it would all bypass the spouse, and there we would be. So now I think we're going to break.
Right.
Yeah, we'll come back and talk about how we plan around this statute.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment. If you have questions, 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. Okay, welcome back to the program. Good to have you with us here on Let's Talk Legal, brought to you by Harvell and Collins Attorneys of Law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us.
So, Ben, what we do in these contexts is we advise the client of the statute and what the effect of it could be on their estate. And then one of the planning tools that we can discuss with the client is the fact that the last will and testament of the spouse would simply direct that the elective share portion, whatever that portion might be, is transferred into a separate and distinct trust for the benefit of the surviving spouse.
Right.
But upon the death of that spouse, that trust property then, of course, would go back to the children of the first marriage. So, in effect, the elective share is suspended. It's there for the surviving spouse, but makes its way back to the children of the first marriage, which is many times what these clients' goal or objective happens to be. Keep in mind that without the trust, this elective share would simply pass to the surviving spouse, and then very likely their estate would then pass to their children. And this elective share amount would simply therefore not ever make its way back to the children of the first to die, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah, and again, it's a planning procedure you need to be thinking about, and that's why you say you advise them when they talk about how they're going to leave everything.
Right. So, you know, for the listener out there who's the who doesn't want to give his or her, and it's usually the guy who dies first. So I'll say his. I mean, I don't know why it's that way. It just seems to be that way. Let's say, you know, he dies first, and he wants to provide for his surviving spouse, but doesn't want her to just take 50% of all those total net assets if they've been married for more than 15 years. So for that client, that potential client, that person, that listener on the radio, then they need to know that the planning technique is exactly what Cecil just described, and an appropriate type of trust to leave an amount equal to that elective share in trust for the surviving spouse, for their benefit, to take care of that surviving spouse. But then the asset then is redirected, you know, right back to his kids, which is or wherever he wants it to go. But I mean, typically that's the way it works. So you can take control of this situation by planning, kind of planning around the statute, but controlling the statute, because there's a big difference between the surviving spouse just taking the 50% and doing whatever she wants to with it, like getting remarried and it end up going to somebody else, or it going into a trust and being there for her, but she doesn't have the right to just take it and use it however she wants to, because there's going to be a trustee to oversee it.
And as you said, it wouldn't make its way into yet another estate.
That's right. There's some control, you know, from the grave, so to speak, by the individual who's planned ahead. So that's important. You know, one of the questions we also get when we're sitting down with folks who are interested in this particular situation, not from a planning perspective, but if someone has died, is how in the world do we find out what this deceased person had? Because many times you know, folks, especially those on up in age and mm-hmm. years, they're not really that forthcoming with, you know, maybe even their second spouse, and certainly not the children of mm-hmm. their second spouse about right. what they have.
Right.
So the statute recognizes that, and it allows for a very strong discovery process where one can get information about the probate assets, the non-probate assets, the gifts within the last year. Mm-hmm. You can get the whole picture of everything.
And that's after filing for that elector's share,
right.
or can you get it ahead of time to determine?
You've got to file it first. Okay. Right. Remember, the 6-month filing period right. is very important. So the teeth in this statute with regard to getting this information, of course, this information is vital because that's how we calculate the total net assets.
Right.
That's what we take the percentage of. So the statute recognizes that, allows you to get all this information, and that to the casual listener may sound like, well, seems like of course you would be able to get that. But here's the kicker mm-hmm. in the statute. If the estate of the deceased doesn't come forward with this information voluntarily mm-hmm. and you have to fight for it mm-hmm. or you have to get into this more adversarial legal proceeding about it, well, you automatically get your attorney's fees for having to go through that headache.
Wow.
So, and that to the,
that's important.
That to the casual listener may sound like, you know, something that, well, don't you always get your attorney's fees? You hardly ever get your attorney's fees. You mm-hmm. know, in North Carolina, if you're in court, if you have a statute that's on point that allows you to get attorney's fees, or you have a contract that says that if there's a breach, the prevailing party gets their attorney's fees and cost, then you're in a position where most likely you will get them reasonable attorney's fees.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that so important? It's important because it costs money to hire an attorney to deal with this complexity.
Right.
So,
especially when it's adversarial, then it gets even more complicated.
It can, absolutely. So, the elective share statute is one of those statutes that specifically has the shall language in it, not the may.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the difference there? The court looks at this and says, okay, the prevailing party may get their attorney's fees. Well, that's completely discretionary.
Mm-hmm.
But when the statute indicates that the prevailing party shall recover attorney's fees, well, that's not, the court then doesn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the strongest language you can have in order to get those attorney's fees back. So that gives us the teeth to be able to basically make the other side voluntarily hand over everything. Because if they don't, there's a big risk there that they're going to get, you know, popped for an additional amount and pay, you know, our attorney's fees and having to go through it.
Right. You know, you mentioned, Cecil, about the lovebird arrangement between the elder folks who might get married. It's not always the arrangement with their kids, though. So that's where this becomes contentious, right?
No doubt.
That is correct. Again, Ben, probably the best planning tool is, in fact, this trust. It works very efficiently. It's not terribly complicated. It just simply is, I like to think of it as just kind of a suspension mm-hmm. of certain assets that are, you know, if you will, identified, bifurcated, put in a box. They're there for the use of the surviving spouse, and then they pass back to the respective children. So it is a very doable
mm-hmm.
Plan. But, of course, as Wes has mentioned, and I agree, our listeners are in a dark alley right now listening
right.
to all of this.
Right.
And we understand that. The important thing, as we move toward closure here, the important thing is that, you know, is to go and seek some advice. Don't make these assumptions about, mm-hmm. well, I just assume that everything went
yeah.
to my husband
that
or my
often.
Wife.
Yes.
You know, I assume that everything would be okay. Well, those are that we need to confirm those assumptions.
More coming in just a moment on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, online at harvellandcollins.com. a couple of things that we can add to this as we're talking about the elective share is one thing that comes up, Cecil, as you know, more and more older people live together and they don't get married. It doesn't help you there, does it?
No, if you're not married, then we don't run into these issues. Mm-hmm. And that is an interesting program, actually, that we could talk about.
Yeah, all these other ideas come to my head.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
when you mention that, no
people
question.
People are not married, and yet, I mean, we have a file in our office right now. You know, my goodness, they were together for 20 years or so. She finally did have to move out and move back with her family, but, you know, we see a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not a common law state that acknowledges these long-term relationships. It's all about that certificate of marriage. Mm-hmm. We either have one or we either don't.
Uh-huh. Now, what about picking a trustee mm-hmm. for that elective share?
Yeah. The trustee in these files has to be an independent trustee, someone that is not related or would not have a benefit in mm-hmm. the trust. So it cannot be, for instance, the children who eventually are going to inherit the property back to from their mother or
right.
father. It needs to be someone disinterested. But we usually are able to find that person without too much trouble.
Okay.
Now, if you're talking about, a second marriage, third marriage, but the marriage hadn't happened yet.
Yeah. They ain't talking about prenup.
You can deal with this in a prenup. Interestingly, I know we just have a couple minutes left. I was dealing with a client not long ago, very wealthy client, married to a very wealthy second marriage. And the intent was to not leave the assets to each other, but to keep it in the family mm-hmm. through the lineal descent. Well, in talking with the client about this particular issue, she indicated to me, well, I have a prenup and we spend a lot of money on that prenup. I got it. I'm sure that's taken care of. Well, so, well, let me take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So we get the prenup and there's no language in the prenup whatsoever with regard to what happens in the event of a death.
Mm-hmm.
Waiver of rights, waiver of elective share, waiver of right to descent, waiver to intestate share, any of these things at all. It only dealt with divorce related issues.
Mm.
That's it. So that prenup would have left her open completely in the event she died first for a 50% elective share to be mm-hmm. drawn, you know, away from her collective estate. She had a business, she had life. I mean, she very wealthy person. So luckily what happened in that file is that the prenup obviously works both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know who's going to die first.
Right.
So we got organized and talked with the client and talked with the client's husband. He had an attorney. She had us as her attorney. And we did a post-nup that addresses it.
Oh, they,
because they really didn't intend for either side to have the right to an elective share anyway.
Right.
So we just entered an agreement after the fact.
One more minute, Ben. Prenups are so misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
I think the better thing to call this is a contract.
Mm-hmm.
A contract between two people that just happens to be signed before the marriage.
And as you mentioned last week, it'd
Let's
be
don't
better
call
to look
it
at this
a prenup anymore.
As an
Let's just call issue. It a contract. And this contract doesn't even have to address divorce,
mm-hmm.
which is what the hang up is with the word prenup. This contract can be limited to estate issues. It can be limited to this right to descent. It does not have to have by law all of the bells and whistles of a more standard boilerplate prenuptial.
All right. And
all
so,
right.
There you go. So again, we'll be addressing more of these issues, I'm sure, in the weeks to come. If you would like to find out more, go to HarvellandCollins.com where you can listen to past shows. You can get all the details for making an appointment with HarvellandCollins.com.